Thank you for calling Diesel and Clooney Unpack the World. Please listen carefully as our menu options have changed. Press 1 to place a delivery order for pizza. Press 2 to discuss your extended warranty's upcoming expiration. Or press 3 to listen to an insightful podcast full of amazing guests and witty hosts. This is Diesel and Clooney Unpack the World.
I'm going 3. Ooh. I got to go 3.
Oh, thank goodness. Yep. I was very worried you're going to press 1, and then
I
have no pizza. I have no pizza to deliver.
Is this one of those where I can just say it into the, like, I didn't catch that, or do I have to push the button like old
both school? Yeah, both. We accept both.
push the button and say it.
Yeah, you got to double down.
Yeah. Hey, it's good to see you, Chris.
Oh, it's good to see you too, Jerry. It's been a little while. It's been a whole week.
Yeah, it has, which is right on schedule, right?
Yeah. I know. Look at us. We're scheduled people now. We're scheduled people now. Sometimes I wish, Jerry, that I could just bring in an expert to tell me how to get the most.
I wish I had an expert in so many things.
Well, you know, Jerry, I feel like we might actually somehow be connected to some experts. Why don't we bring one on now?
Let's do it. Let's do
it. Oh, good. Jerry, because I am proud to introduce to you, to both of our listeners, I'm deeply, deeply grateful that we were able to get some time from a phenomenal person. This is Dr. Anisha Abrams. And I met Anisha initially in the Netherlands, as I recall.
In the Netherlands.
And we had a marvelous chat. And since then, I have been just blown away by everything that she is able to connect with and be a part of.
That's a big statement, because she is connected to and a part of a lot of different things.
So many things.
Some really big things.
Yeah, and the fact that she is willing to come on and share some wisdom from those many areas with us is nothing short of a delight. So, Anisha, thank you so much for being with us.
Well, it's wonderful to be here. Thank you, Chris and Jerry. And I love the intro.
You don't have to tell us your choice.
pizza.
We all need pizza. If we were good hosts, we would have pizza delivered to our guests.
But I was going to choose the pizza, but
we need to get better at this. We need to get better at this. So, Anisha, do you mind telling us? And we talked a little bit even before we started recording that I didn't even want to attempt to give too much of a bio for you, because your story is so interesting. It's a big bio. And what you do in so many different fields is so interesting. So to start with, where are you at right now, and what takes up most of your time?
Well, I'm currently based in Washington, D.C., and I'm acting chief of the Division of Adolescent Medicine at Children's National Hospital. So just a big way of saying that I'm a pediatrician, and my specialty is working with teenagers, and currently very focused on working with young people as they're coming into the hospital, the clinical setting, and very much in the trenches when it comes to the COVID pandemic right now.
Which is so impressive. And what's even more impressive is everything that you've done leading up to that as well. I mean, as I said, we met in the Netherlands because your background is medical, but you have dipped in to so many other things. You have connections in Hong Kong. You have connections with the military. We're going to get into, I mean, even, my goodness, I don't want to spoil the surprise, but even the big screen is a connection that we'll get into. Tell us a little bit about your background. Tell us your origin story. That because to just land on the fact
that what the movie is about is it the Anisha origin story?
I'll watch
that. Yeah,
I know, who wouldn't? But yeah, just give us a walkthrough a little bit of how you got to where you are, and just a quick rundown. I mean, it'd take the whole episode, but just a quick rundown of, you know, your interactions, TCK, and beyond, that you bring to bear.
Well, I'll just say that I've had the opportunity of living in many different countries and communities. And as you mentioned, I actually lived in Hong Kong for 5 years and worked there and lived there with my family, and also lived in the Netherlands for another 5 years. Was born in the United States. My family is originally from Southern India, grew up as an Indian American, did my medical training in the U.S. and was a military physician for many years, stationed at Fort Bragg and at Walter Reed, until, of course, our life took us abroad. So as many of your listeners have, I've had this experience of being among many different cultures, and it's certainly an area of extreme interest of mine is being able to certainly support other young people and adults that are going through that experience.
Yeah, you wrote a book about that, right?
You're right. I did.
You guys are good. This is one of the things I love about the stuff that you've put out, Anisha, is like you've had this amazing experience, like a lot of us have in different ways, like a lot of people that we're connected to have. But you've had so many elements of that, and you've done a really great job of bringing the intersection of all of those things together. And the book is one fine example of that. So tell us a little bit about your book.
Well, I wrote a book called Raising Global Teens that was published a year ago, but it's very much based on my experiences as being a physician, but also a parent, and also an adult that's grown up between cultures. And it is meant for parents, but certainly teenagers can read it as well. And it's, again, really aimed at families that have this experience of either moving from place to place, moving from country to country, having a parent that's from a different background, having a young person that is experiencing multiple cultures, which is a lot of people right now in the world. And certainly kind of thinking of it from that perspective or lens. And a lot of what I talk about in the book is that the teen years is this wonderful time where you're talking about your physical development. You're also thinking about your sexual and gender identity. But on top of that, you're also thinking about your cultural identity as well, and helping young people to really be able to have a complete sense of this by the time they become adults is really important. Yeah. So a lot of my book touches on that, but it's also based on top questions that parents and kids have asked me about issues related to puberty and sexual health and depression and all the big topics that are out there. So it's meant to just be a really practical read.
Love it. It's there's so much to unpack there.
It's so true. And this is one of the things that I've thoroughly enjoyed. I have been privileged to get to speak alongside Anisha at some conferences and things. And the ability that you have to tackle these difficult issues in an approachable way, and especially in a way that involves this cross-cultural and international and transient experience, that is so incredibly valuable, because there are hard discussions for everybody. Yeah. And then you add in the complication of transience and multiple cultures and all of that. And sometimes it's easy to bury those. And then a bit of a pandemic, just some light pandemic seasoning on top of it all, just to add extra flavor, because we didn't have enough flavor. I think it's phenomenal. And maybe that's, you know, there's tons to unpack, but I would love to hear, especially because of your professional and clinical experience, I would love to hear a little bit about your thoughts on the pandemic and what it's done for mental health, for teens, for adolescents. I mean, being a teenager has always been a bit of a challenge. Adolescence has extended as far as a time frame. And then we threw this onto it. So you were already looking into the challenges that are faced in those areas. And now the pandemic's on top of it. So what are the trends that you're seeing? What's coming through the trenches that you're having to assist with?
Well, pandemic has been incredibly tough for young people, for families, and it's not just here in the United States, but it's just around the world. You know, everywhere that I talk to families, I talk to young people, I think they have a common experience in saying that it's been a tremendous loss of their milestones, of their routines, their ability to travel, to connect. I mean, all the things that we took for granted. So it's been incredibly difficult. What I can also tell you is that we certainly have an epidemic of mental health issues, at least in the United States, but we're seeing that again around the world, a significant increase in kids that are coming in with things like anxiety, depression, suicide, eating related issues. And again, this is talking about adolescents, but we certainly see this again in younger people as well. So an enormous problem across the board. And I think it's really, really important that we think about these issues and really working on ways to continue to address them, because even if COVID numbers are decreasing, they're still going to continue to be a ripple effect for many years to come.
Yeah, I'm so interested in your perspective on this, because this is the conversation that the world is having, right? Like, all of us have noticed that this has had a massive impact on it. Chris and I talk about this stuff all the time, but we do it as like from our armchairs, right? Like we sit back and we wax eloquent about what the factors are and what the variables are and all of the things that have impacted us physically, mentally, socially, all of that. But like, what can you tell us as armchair pandemic commentators from a medical perspective? Like, what is it that we should know? One, about kind of the factors that have played into all of the, especially the mental challenges that have that the pandemic has brought, but also just how can we support each other as people, as parents, as social networks through what sometimes feels like the tail end of this, but like you mentioned, we don't realize how far reaching the impact and effects of this are. Like, what insight can you give us?
Well, I think we could spend the entire time of this podcast just talking about that alone. But I will just say that being aware and being attuned are really important right now. And so probably four very specific tips that I would put out in terms of how to help our young people as they're going through this pandemic is, first, that it's so important to spend time connecting and communicating with young people, checking in and making sure they're doing well. And things can really, you know, change from day to day. So making sure you go back to having those routines, like, you know, family meal time or doing those activities with young people, just to make sure you know how they're doing. But having those conversations right now can be really protective in terms of understanding where they are and how they're feeling. The other piece that I would put out there is that a lot of young people are feeling really stressed and anxious. And so parents building in their own toolkit to how to handle stress and anxiety and then modeling those behaviors is incredibly important for kids. And so, again, if parents are doing things like exercising or eating healthy or making sure they're putting their devices down and then making sure their kids are doing the same and really being able to make sure that they're children and teenagers have ways to handle stress and looking at healthy ways to handle stress, I think are really, really helpful as well. And then the final piece I would just mention, and of course, there's a lot more we could say in terms of how to address it, is that realizing that probably one of the biggest markers of success in life is really how we handle those challenges that we experience. And it's just, again, you know, how much can we get back up on our feet when, again, we're experiencing these things? And so as much as we think of this as a difficult time, if we can also support kids and get them to be able to creatively problem solve and be able to really be able to address some of those challenges, this can be also a really important time for them for any other challenge or journey that they have in the future. So looking at it also as a way for us to start to kind of break things down and to kind of work with them in terms of what they're experiencing can be really helpful. Yeah. I will say that we also want to be aware of when kids are really in trouble. I think that was the other piece that you brought up, is how do we know when there's danger? And I would mention that if you have a young person that is for any reason telling you that they're feeling really down or sad because you've specifically asked, or they're no longer having interest in the activities that they used to, they've suddenly kind of really changed their eating habits, they're really withdrawing, those are kids I think that you really need to be worried about. And I firmly believe it takes a village to raise a child. And so being able to reach out to another adult in their lives, whether, again, it's, you know, another family member, a coach, can be really helpful sometimes. But certainly, I think also health providers are very much there to be able to check in and make sure that they're doing okay.
Yeah, and I want to throw this question in there, because this is something that has been present in our experience abroad and living internationally, is that a lot of times the resources, depending on where you live, can be higher or lower. So, what can you tell parents who are wrestling through that, either for themselves or for their children, who may be living in a place where there's not the accessibility to mental health resources that would be available in a lot of Western countries, for example? And that's a stereotype in itself, I realize. But when that is the situation, who do they reach out to?
Well, if you're truly concerned and you're worried that your child has some issues related to anxiety or depression or any of those things, and you're in a place where there may not be those resources, I will say that the beauty of the pandemic is a lot of things have become virtual. Yeah. And so there are certainly, you know, other adults or providers or support groups that you can maybe access from a virtual standpoint. And I think that would be one thing to think about. Yeah. But I also will just, again, remind listeners that so much of the challenges sometimes can also just be handled in terms of, you know, how do we get kids re-involved in things that give them passion and energy and interest? A lot of what I talk about is how do we build on the strengths that are unique to young people and as a way to help them with self-confidence and self-esteem? So are there activities that they enjoy? One of my sons, when we first moved here during the pandemic where everything was virtual, really enjoyed debate team. And so that he did for a very long time. And that really helped him to get through some of the challenges of not seeing people face-to-face. So again, coming back to activities that they do enjoy, coming back to those connections, you know, making sure you continue to have those connections. But as I mentioned, also considering using healthcare in a virtual format if you don't have those resources locally.
Yeah.
I love so much the attitude you have and the way that you, the lens you see it through about being able to see even things like the pandemic in an opportunistic, you know, in a positive kind of light. I think that's just incredibly important because it's very easy, you know, to talk about what the pandemic has taken from us and all of this kind of thing when you're right, we can reframe it in a positive way and build on, you know, find new and exciting ways to build on the strengths that maybe this has brought out. Right. I think, you know, I'm curious how you've seen things change over the years as far as that there's a lot more attention now, and some of it probably because of pandemic, a lot more attention on mental health. We pay a lot more attention to these things because we've had this global shared experience. And I think, you know, for third culture kids, one of the things that I witnessed and observed and thought was really interesting was in some ways this was a great equalizer, just because for a lot of third culture kids, they already had to do a lot of socializing online. They already knew what it was like to have consistency taken away. And now everybody has. And so in some ways, you know, even that can be seen as an opportunity. I think third culture kids have a lot to offer, and they do. They have a little more experience in this already. But even beyond that, you know, charting things like I speak frequently about like a decline in empathy and things like that. Mm-hmm. But what have you seen, do you think, that is changing just in the time where you've been working on this? Are we seeing an increase in anxiety? Was that happening before the pandemic? You know, are there other factors that have been changing that brought us to where we are? Are there other trends, for example? You know, there's loads of things I think we can attribute it to, whether it's, you know, technology or social changes or what have you. But are there trends that you've seen that, you know, either because of or even predating the pandemic, or even maybe that you think will continue after the pandemic?
Right. Well, I think that's a lot to unpack in one question, but
I just threw it all in. That's it. That's our whole episode.
Exactly, right, 37 questions.
But I will focus on two specific issues that I've seen an increase on that I think will continue to be part of what we see going forward. And one is the increase in eating disorders that's occurred. You know, that has been on the upswing prior to the pandemic, but really increased during the pandemic. And I think in part because food for many young people is something that they have control over. Mm-hmm. And the pandemic has really been an exercise in loss of control of the things that you potentially have. And what have many kids had to do? Be at home with their adults or parents in their lives. And, you know, again, with the loss of all these other things. So the one thing they, again, come back to is controlling their food. So I've seen so many young people starting at ages 9 and 10 all the way up. And regardless of background, you know, boys, girls, every cultural and ethnic background you can think of that have come in for issues related to disordered eating or restrictive eating or even something called acute food refusal. And I do think this is something that's going to continue on for some time. So just being really attuned and aware to those issues and knowing it's so important to be checking in for a young person. And the question I always ask is, when you look at yourself in the mirror, What do you see? And are you feeling happy about that? Mm-hmm. And how do we change what you're seeing on the outside to what you're seeing on the inside? Like, how do we make that switch? And, mm-hmm. you know, really building on self-esteem and self-confidence is so important for kids right now during the pandemic. So being attuned to the issues related to eating and knowing if a child is suddenly changing their eating habits or suddenly becoming a vegan or a vegetarian or restricting intake, I think is really important. The other piece I wanted to mention has been the increase in media use. And again, you know, we know kids have been doing, they're more on their devices than they ever have been, but I think the pandemic increased that. There's been some benefit. I certainly think for, you know, I think their culture of kids have known this for some time. Being on devices and things help you to connect with people in other countries, help you to be able to talk to friends and family members and so on. So there's some wonderful things that come out of being on devices and certainly media use and social media, but there's also a downside. And there's a number of kids that have a really hard time getting off of it. They no longer are able to get out and to do other things or have normal like relationships and just be able to talk and, you know, have the kind of conversations that we've had, you know, in days past where you're just out in the streets and on your bikes and playing. It's all very much done on devices. So it's really changed the nature of how we have relationships. So being aware of that and knowing that sometimes, you know, there's a fine balance and overuse is also really important.
Yeah. Do you have any advice there for parents as a parent or as a doctor? Yeah. Who I heard someone say the other day, a colleague of mine said, privilege that is removed feels like oppression. And like when we've gone through this thing, and a lot of us as parents, myself included, have allowed more screen time. But then the taking away of that and trying to get back on track. How do we get back on track as parents regulating that?
Well, I think at the end of the day, we say that there isn't a specific amount of time that a kid can be on devices. And more, a lot of their work is actually done on a computer, right? You know, lots of young people are on computers in many parts of the world. I think the real thinking now is that parents and adults, caregivers should be media coaches. So again, there's not a specific amount of time, but we are coaches and we help them to navigate to be able to do things that actually are educational and have value. Mm-hmm. So if one of my boys, for example, wants to do Khan Academy, which is a lot of really great kind of modules about math and other things, I'm okay with that. If they're also, you know, perhaps doing a video game where they're shooting someone mindlessly for like hours on end, I have a lot, you know, less time that I really feel like they should be investing in that. So thinking about what the educational value is of what they're doing, and maybe allowing kids to do something that, again, they're getting something out of. The other tip that comes to mind are the three C's, which is knowing your child, knowing their connections, and knowing the community. So again, knowing your child and whether or not you have a child that has a hard time getting off of a device. Some kids that have things like attention deficit, it's much harder for them to get off of something. So knowing your child and whether or not that's someone that needs a lot more boundaries and structure, or sometimes, you know, you take the device out of their room, you know, you have to turn the Wi-Fi off. You're the parent, you have to stop them. Knowing what connections they have. Is this a child that's on devices, but is still able to relate to the rest of the world, is still going outdoors and doing other activities and, you know, connecting with others. And certainly, again, you know, what's the community? What are the kind of things that your child is actually doing on that device? Is it something that's educational or not? So thinking about those three C's, I think, can sometimes be really helpful and a rule of thumb.
Yeah, outstanding.
Oh my goodness, it's such a treasure trove of helpful tidbits, nuggets, as we like to say here on our podcast, nuggets of wisdom strewn all over the place. I think you touch on, and I've heard you speak enough to know that you touch on this a lot, the idea that there's different aspects to different people that, you know, I like that you were able to point out that what works for one child may not work for another child, because we want to simplify things. So I think we all want there to be just a nice set of rules, a set of, well, this is how many hours you should allow for screen time. Mm-hmm. When in all actuality, you know, what you point out is so true, that different kids are going to be affected differently. And I think so much of that, it's personality, it's history, it's all kinds of things. And there's really no replacement for just individual attention, getting to know, you know, what the trends are as far as different kids and things. And even with schools I work with, I think that's one of the challenges they face, is it's really hard to create, you know, a giant overarching framework with very set rules that will still take into account, you know, all the individual quirks and individual tolerances and individual strengths and everything like that. It's just, it's complicated. And it makes me so grateful that there are people like you who can help draw out some of the wisdom to be able to apply that on an individual case. I think you've answered, you know, my question of 37 questions. I think well done.
Yeah,
well done there. My gosh. And I want to, the beautiful thing is that we could go for hours just picking your brain on a clinical level, but there's so much more. And again, your knowledge and experience in sort of cross-cultural and multicultural and intercultural and lots of other words with cultural, is vast. It is so vast and exciting that not only have you written a book that involves, you know, cross-cultural insight and clinical insight, but there's even a movie on the way. There's a movie on the way.
Yeah.
Who have we had as a guest who can say they have a movie on the way?
No one.
I mean, no one. So I would love to hear, because your personal experience, you know, growing up as an Indian American with, you know, international experience throughout your life that you then, you know, brought to bear on helping kids in similar and vast situations. The fact that that's all who you are, and that there's going to be a movie about it. Tell us, if you don't mind, tell us a little bit about the movie, the premise, all that good stuff. Because it's recently, you said it was finished recently. Like it's not just a pipe dream; it's happening.
Well, I have to tell you, the movie is serendipity, and it's certainly a very positive thing that is part of my life right now, when there's so much other challenges related to COVID and so on. And I'm a firm believer that we all need to share our story. And I know you, Chris, and Jerry have also talked about the power of our personal story and sharing our stories. And it just so happened that I shared a story about my family in the 1960s. My parents had just moved to the United States and they had taken a road trip. And I share this story to a girlfriend of mine that lived in Hong Kong, who happened to also be an actress by background and was in Mean Girls. And she loved the story, which I will relate to in a moment. And long story short, it's become a short film. It was filmed just in Canada, and it's become a movie, and it's being launched into the universe, and it's been submitted to multiple film festivals. So it's just really exciting.
So wild.
Yeah, we just raised our level so high, Chris.
So high.
Yeah.
I mean, and you know, both Jerry and I were going to appear in the movie, but obviously our schedules were, we had too much going on.
It's a busy time. And
it's a little too busy. We've had to put our movie careers on hold just for a little while. But
I'll tell you the story behind it, because I think it has a lot to do with some of the themes that you talk about in this podcast. And I think it's so important as a theme right now for all of, you know, what we're seeing in terms of challenges around the world. And really the movie relates to the fact that in 1969, Neil Armstrong went to the moon, and my parents, as young immigrants to the United States, watched him going to the moon. And I think on a borrowed television at the time, because there weren't many TVs and they were struggling graduate students in Delaware. I grew up in Delaware. And my grandmother had just come to the country as an immigrant herself. And I say all of this because they were big Neil Armstrong fans. And probably several months later, they had to do a road trip to Ohio. And on the way, as they were driving through Ohio, my grandmother happened to see the sign Wapakoneta, home of Neil Armstrong. And she mentioned to my father, you know, this is Neil Armstrong's hometown. We just saw him going to the moon. Do you just mind if we stop in his hometown? And my dad's like, why are we stopping here? But of course. So they stop in a diner. And of course, this 1969, so there's not many Indians in the area. They stop in the diner. They have a meal. And my grandmother, being this very spunky, gutsy woman, said, oh, you know, this is Neil Armstrong's hometown. You know, where does he live? Small town, USA. The waitress says, oh, go right, go left, go right. That's his home. So my grandmother gets back in the car and she's very determined. And she says, can we just go by his house just to, you know, see his house? And You know, the backstory to this is my dad came in a little bit earlier, and he actually had gone through theology school, marched with Martin Luther King in Selma, Alabama, has had the experience of being an Indian American in the South where, you know, things were a little bit difficult. So he had a much more nuanced view of just kind of stopping by someone's house. My mother and my grandmother were, you know, much more just had arrived and whatever else, and have a slightly different kind of sense of things. So that was a little bit of the backstory. So they do drive by Neil Armstrong's house, and they get there. And my grandmother said, "Can we just please go in and pay our respects to Neil Armstrong's parents?" And my dad's like, "Nothing doing. They're going to set the dogs on us. Like, you just don't do this around here." And my grandmother said, "You know, why not? We're here. You know, he went to the moon. Like, what a wonderful thing. Like, I really admire this family. Can we just stop by?" So he said, "I have nothing to do with this. You can go in." And I was, by the way, a baby at the time. I was like 6 months old. So I'm in the backseat with my father, my grandmother, and their mother, both wearing saris. Again, just really unusual at that time. Knock on the door of Neil Armstrong's home. Neil Armstrong's parents open the door. And there they see these two women. They probably thought they were Martians. And my grandmother said, "We just want to pay our respects." And Neil Armstrong's mom said, "Come on in for tea." And and so from there it goes on. It's just this really lovely story. It turns out that Neil Armstrong had just gone to India as part of a world tour. Wow. And this is, I think, really the beauty of being able to open doors, the power of being attuned to other cultures. I think that's part of the reason that Neil Armstrong's parents opened the door in the first place. And lo and behold, as they were sitting down for tea, Neil Armstrong happened to be visiting his parents, and he comes down the stairs and they have this wonderful tea. And at the very end, Neil Armstrong takes a picture of my family. He's not in the picture, but it's in my album with Neil Armstrong's parents. And my dad happens to come in with me as a little baby. And, you know, we have this picture in our family album. So it's this really short little story. But my friend really sees on this to say, what a beautiful story for all of what's happening right now, the power of shared humanity and connections, of opening doors at a time where we're all closing doors and we, you know, are not able to think about these things. And that's just a tiny little bit of this movie. So there you go.
Wow.
Oh my goodness.
I am so ready to go see the movie now.
Yes.
No, I'm so excited. I'm so excited. Well, and you said it's making the rounds at festivals coming up, yeah?
It is. It's been submitted to Tribeca and Cannes and a number of film festivals. We'll certainly see, you know, where it lands, but we are very excited and would love folks to go and, you know, check out our website. It's One Small Visit is our website. We're on Instagram. We are on Facebook as well. And we have a wonderful cast. A number of our actors and actresses were on Kim's Convenience, which is a pretty popular show, originally Canadian. I think that they've just really done a beautiful job. The cast and the crew are really international, around the globe. This movie was really produced around the world, but was filmed in Canada.
Gotcha.
Wow. Say that website one more time.
Oh yeah. It's www.onesmallvisit.com. The title of the movie is One Small Visit.
Nice. Oh, which is what a phenomenal story. And as you've said, I think all of us here are huge fans of the power of story. I mean, it's how our brains most efficiently organize information. It's how we build connection. There's so much to it. So it is so exciting to me.
There's so much about connection in that story. And what I love, even in just the way you framed it right there, is that there are so many voices in the back of our head that say, don't connect, right? Like, this is not going to go well. This is my experience. You can't knock on that door. You can't do this. And really, like, what this world needs right now is somebody just to not listen to the voice and say, I'm going to connect. I'm going to go knock on the door anyway. But then it also needs some people on the other side of the door who are willing to open it up and say, come on in and sit down. And there are so many rich, rich, beautiful principles that come out of that single story. So I can't wait to see it.
What a phenomenally relevant time for something like that to come out.
It's, This is what we need right now.
This is exactly. Well, and speaking of that, I wanna pick your brain further. So here's my next volley of 37 questions wrapped in one. Because we're relying
on you as the medical professional to know when we are too deep into your brain and we just need to back off. So again, you've got the reins there. You tell us, but go ahead, Chris. Pick a little deeper.
Pick a little deeper. Well, again, I love the intersection that you bring with, you know, story and clinical and cross-cultural. And so for you especially, you know, your whole experience, again, growing up as an Indian American and bringing that to bear again on what you brought forth in a career and things like that. So with that and your views on multiculturalism and the challenges that we're facing and also I think the strength and the goodness that can come out of it. I mean, if you had to broadcast something again to both of our listeners, you know, if you wanted to broadcast to both our listeners, which might just be Jerry and I, that's entirely possible, but with that, you know, what would you say as far as looking to the future? And if there were some way that you could sort of broadcast out and say, here's the benefits I think that we're going to reap from the work that has to go into multiculturalism, because it is there's a lot of work that has to go into, and we see it all around us, the struggle to be more culturally aware, all that kind of good stuff. So the struggle is real. But in there, you know, what's going to come out of that? Because you're sort of a living example of the good that comes out of cross-cultural experience. Mm-hmm. So yeah, in there somewhere is the question about, you know, moving forward, what can we do to help bring that about more?
Well, I would just start by saying that more and more we do know that young people are becoming cross-cultural, multicultural, or have that experience of multiple cultures in their life. And there are tremendous strengths. As you know, Chris, we talk about all the time in terms of adaptability and a worldview and languages and tolerance and hope and empathy, all those beautiful qualities. Mm-hmm. Of course, there's some inherent challenges in terms of not quite sometimes knowing, you know, where is home, sometimes these issues in terms of perhaps having a conflict or certainly issues related to grief and longing and sadness if you're, you know, leaving a place. So those are other things to be aware of. And certainly I think something that's very ever-present that we talk and think about a lot more as providers is also the issue of racism and discrimination and how really we need to be thinking about that and diversity and inclusion in all of the work that we do. But I think what I do feel is that there's been much more of a trend for awareness and openness about these topics. I see that in the healthcare world, that we're much more attuned to asking about issues related to culture and identity and being thoughtful about it. Certainly thinking a lot more about the effect of discrimination and prejudice and those type of issues in terms of, again, young people that are coming through certain experiences. And I would just add a quote from you and from your book, Chris. And I always keep this in my head, but that our young people that have had that cross-cultural experience are really beacons of light in a world that desperately needs them. And I so believe that.
Mm. Yeah, that's so good. So good. You just got quoted on your own podcast.
I got you.
Nice.
I don't even know what to do with that. I'm blushing a little bit. I'm blushing a little bit.
That's hard.
Oh, but I do. I think it's so true that, you know, there. I am a big advocate for the idea that we have to look forward with hope. And I've always loved the idea that, you know, third culture kids in many ways, they are the preview of coming attractions and the challenges they face, everyone is now facing, and the strengths they have, everyone could now benefit from. And so, yeah, being able to see, like I said, I love the intersection of story and clinical and cross-cultural, and mm-hmm. I love how that all comes together. And then you throw a movie into there as well. Right. And oh my goodness, that gives me a ton of hope. You know, it's encouraging to hear that there is increased awareness, you know, on that kind of thing. It's really, I've been encouraged even just recently, the FIGT conference, which is where all of us have been to, mm-hmm. and what an amazing network of people. But I'm constantly thrilled to bits just to see, you know, more voices being added to the body of work that that helps people understand life cross-culturally and deals with the issues that come from transience and transitions and everything. And so it's exciting to see this all growing, because I think the benefits are going to stretch so much further beyond just, you know, just the original sort of, these are the expats and these are the, you know, people who do this in a very concentrated way, but there's so much relevance on a much bigger scale. So, so thank you, Anisha, for all of your contributions, you know, to that area. I'm so glad that I managed to run into you all that time ago in the Netherlands, and all the time since. I'm very excited for the adventure still to come.
Yeah, and Anisha, could you just let our listeners know how can they connect with you? How can they get the book? You've already mentioned the movie, how can they best connect with you?
Well, I have a website. It's dranishaabraham.com. I'm on Instagram. It's dr_Anisha. My book is available on Amazon, Barnes & Noble's, Walmart, a number of other sites around the world. And again, it's called Raising Global Teens, Parenting in the 21st Century.
Love it.
And it's a phenomenal book. I highly recommend it. And yeah, make sure, do connect with Anisha on all the possible ways. She also has a newsletter, an e-newsletter that goes out that I'm always excited about. There's always such good information in it. It's a wealth of goodness that comes out. So that's worth connecting to. Goodness, Jerry and I are so grateful. Thank you
so much. This is good. Yeah, this is really good. Thank you, Anisha, so much for joining us and shedding light on the things that Chris and I talk about with zero expertise. I feel like in many ways we've been validated, and in so many ways we've been trumped, and we've gotten some actual expertise to speak into the topics that we love to talk about. So thank you so much for all of that.
Well, thank you, Chris and Jerry.
Oh, goodness. And I was just going to say that. Yeah. Thank you for quoting me as well. My goodness. I will make sure, and you know, I'll pay you later. I'll pay you later. Yeah. It'll be fine. Thanks for letting it. So it's been so much fun. I hope we can all get together again sometime soon. All right, dear listeners, thank you so much for joining us. We do hope to see you again soon, or really that you'll hear us
through this, Chris.
Soon.
We don't see the listeners.
No, it's very true. In my mind, I do. I picture them, and we're all in a very fancy theater. For some reason, this week in particular, a very fancy theater. It's because we've gone high caliber.
We have gone high caliber.
Movie people with us. We'll see you again next time.